You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found that 12 fractional ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Homarg, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television and Tyler Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the big marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced that I had to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. This got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side with me, and we're talking moccasin and Joe. Where the party go hell? Out in the St. John's swamps.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Viscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Viscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Okay, I'm okay. We're a little tired. The old road warrior is going hoofing it down that road. But we've to go cross country the way we do in 2 days, it's pretty remarkable, ladies and gentlemen. There's not many people that can do that. I mean, stay up and just keep going and trekking 24/7 is the way we do it. But that's how we do it, and we don't miss it. You know, I mean, it's something that happens, and we're happy doing it because we get a chance to get across this country and see so many beautiful people and hear their experiences, and they share it with us and vice versa. So it's been a great, great time for us. As you know, Bill, we literally rolled into our new location, and I gotta tell you, we hit thunderstorms last night or in the middle of the night, and it's been quite a chore. But we've met some beautiful people coming across country, and we're going to share a bunch of that with you tonight. Before we get going tonight, I want to send out a big, big kudos and a prayer to a good friend of mine. He went and had a second cancer operation, a guy named Barry Abrams. like a brother to me. He's like one hell of a guy. And he's listening out there in the hospital in the bed. The show is dedicated to you, Barry. We love you. We hope for your recovery. Joe also is dedicated to Mitch Waite's mama. Hope she can't leave without any pain. And go with God, my dear. We're all here praying for. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you, we've driven about 7,000 miles in the last 5 days, and also been out in the brush. Hasn't been easy. Okay, I want you people to understand something. You know, you guys see what it's like, and product of what we do out in the field. And the reason we do it is because of you, okay, believe it or not. We put it, send our stories up, and I understand Bill's been having some problems trying to get it up, the Vermont stuff, but I'm sure he'll have it within the next 24 hours. And he's even going to have the stuff for Florida, I'm told. So please forgive us. We've been going through a lot of mechanical problems and technical problems, and he's working as fast as he can. I'll tell you right now, these creatures are on the move, ladies and gentlemen. They're on the move. In a lot of cases, it's going to be a lot the late summer due to the fact that these creatures have not hit the areas that we have estimated. It's because of this erratic weather that we've had ever since last October. You've heard me talk about it all over on every one of my shows. It's been not good. Well, it's come to fruition. We finally hit a place up in Vermont, ladies and gentlemen, and I got to tell you straight up, got out to this man's area. Now, I don't think he's with us tonight, but somebody who was on the expedition with us for the first time ever being on any type of expedition, he's a newbie. His name is Jim Dawson. He was there. He's going to talk about it later. But I just want you guys to understand that even myself, the tenure that I have, the way we think we've got this stuff covered, sometimes we don't. And the reason being is the problem we're having, terrible weather. We reached weather out there that was beautiful. Don't get me wrong. But morel mushrooms are still out. And berries were still out. They hadn't even been touched. Have not even been touched. What does that tell you? It tells you that the creatures and the other people of the forest didn't come out to eat it either. But without saying any more, it's going to be a fantastic story. We have a guy named Dennis with us. He's out in Florida via Oklahoma. This guy has gone through some amazing, I mean amazing, situation with a family of Bigfoot. Came out on his farm, and he's got a lot to tell us. So he's down in Florida now. Without any further ado, let's get out there to Florida, talk to Dennis. Dennis, you out there?
Yeah, I'm out here at Palm Coast.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Got a lot of fishing in today.
Well, that's fantastic. Did you catch any?
One grouper, that's all day.
But you enjoyed yourself, didn't you?
Yeah.
And that's all that matters, Dennis. Tell us the area in Oklahoma where you had your farm and what year all this incredible encounters were going on.
Well, prior to age 14 is when I actually encountered what I knew for sure, you know, was something like a Bigfoot. But before then, I told people bears were black bears that walked upright, because I was never got within about a quarter of a mile, so I didn't know for sure if they were anything like a Bigfoot. And by that time, back in those times, you know, I didn't even know what a Bigfoot was. you know, didn't watch much television, and it wasn't on back then. But when I was 14 years old, it was up in near, is it out in western Oklahoma? And I was, we was living in Caddo County, but right across the line, we was helping a friend of ours get his cotton, the weeds taken out of his cotton because he didn't have no help. And it was, you know, a bright, sunny, really windy day, and some people from California, a migrant farm worker couple, were supposed to help us, you know, chop the weeds out of the field the following day. And when we got over there, the food was all set up like a picnic. The car sat there, and the man and his wife wasn't there. So, you know, that kind of spooked us a little bit. And but anyway, then we went on down the Mom parked the car. It was right after lunch, about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And me and my older sister and my little brother started down, going down our rows, chopping the weeds out of the cotton. And my mother and my little sister, well, she wasn't too old, she's 17 years old, when I was 14. And, well, anyway, there was a big old ripe peach tree next to the old farmhouse that sat next to this little field. And next to this field was a pasture for cattle. And so when we were up our road, you know, up our road about, probably about four city blocks or the town people or a quarter mile if you're a country person. And then we saw my mom waving her arms around, and so we thought, took for granted she just got beast tongue. You know, yellow jackets are a lot of times hanging out in fruit trees. Anyway, in Oklahoma, they do. And so then we turned around, and then pretty soon my youngest sister, she ran for the car and evidently locked herself in it, but, you know, we didn't know that at the time. And so then we kept looking down and trying to figure out. I thought, oh, my youngest sister got bit by bees so bad, she wanted to go home and, you know, doctor her bite. And so we kept tearing down there toward where they was at, and then pretty soon we seen, it looked like what I'd always, up until that time, even though they wasn't supposed to have bears in Oklahoma, I always called them bears. And it started walking up the fence line across from us, down from us and across from us. And so then my mom was ran to the car down there, because I was near it, and my sister had locked the doors out of fear, so she couldn't get in to drive down there where we were. And anyway, the big bear-looking thing got them out, finally got across from us, and then very slowly crossed the fence toward us. It was a little narrow field from one side to the next, wasn't very far. Because there was only about 10 acres of cotton there. And anyway, as it got closer and closer, you know, we all thought, well, let's take a run for the car. But I said, as close as it is to us, you know, I knew enough about animals, some, you know, books I read and stuff, as a Cub Scout and stuff, we studied animals, that they would chase you if you would run. And it was too far down there. It could easily overtake us by then. And so I tried to get my sister and brother to run from it. Then I tried to hold it up, you know, hold my hoe in my hand and hold it off. Maybe as they ran, but they didn't want to split up. And it slowly walked closer to us until it got pretty close to us. And then I told my sister, I said, she was Ladonna, my oldest sister, who was 18 years old. I told her, I'll hold our hose up in the air. And they're made out of heavy steel and stuff, and they got cut to a point. So if they would hit anything, they kind of could hurt it some. I said, let's scream at it and run at it. and bluff it, then maybe it won't hurt us. So, so we, she was screaming, and we walked slower to it, and screaming and hollering and everything, trying to, and then it just tanned there. As we got a little closer by a little closer, we took little steps, and we stared at it, and it just stepped there and stared at us. And then finally, my mom got the car started and started driving right through the field up there as fast as he could step on the accelerator to get to us. And I think it was, we might have scared it at the time, I thought. We succeeded in scaring it away from us. But then we had our back to the west, and, you know, and we was facing it to the east. But then anyway, it ran across, it went and walked back across the deal, that when it got across the fence, it walked right through the cattle. The cattle didn't seem scared, really scared of it. And then it started running over the canyons and then, and it kept, but, you know, like most animal people run, they bend over forward when they run, but this thing was able to keep its whole body totally straight up erect, while its legs was propelling it through up and down canyons and across the pasture, which is by the river, so it was hilly. But that part of the country hardly has any trees. You know, it's just all farms and fields, level ground with not very much cover for anything to hide. And so, but right after, and it went out of sight, then the two military helicopters flew overhead of us at low height toward where the area where that thing ran. So then I quit being scared. And the first thing came to my head, because, you know, I couldn't hardly believe in the weird way it looked. So I thought, oh, it must be some secret robot that the Army has. You know, that's how I explained it to myself, because I couldn't understand something that looked so different than, you know, we went to the zoo all the time, and it looked like nothing that it sort of looked like the only thing close to what I could think of it looked like was it was like a prehistoric man or something, because it had those ridges by over its eyes and stuff. And its jaw was extended more than a person's. And the hair, what made the hair look kind of tall, I think maybe what people think a lot of times they have a big pointy head, is its hair was standing straight up, sticking out, standing straight up on the top of her head. It had quite a bit of hair. And its eyes were really golden. They really showed up, because, like, the whites of our eyes are white. The whites of its eyes was really golden yellow, sort of like those lemurs. If you ever seen lemurs on a nature program, how penetrating looking their eyes are, that's what that thing's eyeballs look like. And it was probably, it had to be somewhere. Oh, what?
Go ahead.
Anyway, it was a, that was when it happened when I was 14. And then when I was 22, we moved to a different location a couple miles north, but it was still, we crossed out of Caddo County into a little bit of, where we moved to then was Airport Road in Weatherford, Oklahoma, a mile and a half south and a half back east. That farmhouse is gone there now. But when we first moved out there, there was almost nobody living out there but the landowner. And now it's been subdivided, and there's a lot of people living out there now. But I would put out lots, since I liked watching animals, and we always had lots of surplus food and vegetables and stuff. I piled them around everywhere, so I get to look at possums and raccoons and everything, and to draw animals around. And then we'd go down and then work on our farms real early parts of the day. But anyway, we did kind of hunting all over, but there by the house is where the place where I had a really close encounter, because one morning my mom said that something, the sow was eating a coyote. Then she'd come back before I got dressed saying the sow, we had a pen with 10 sows in it, and she said one of the sows is eating a gorilla's leg. And so I knew that there wouldn't be no gorillas running around out there. And so by the time I went out there and got in the pen with them, they were mean because they had babies. And one of them had the foot first part of a hairy leg in its mouth. And I couldn't get it to let go of it. And the other sows were kind of trying to bite at my legs and stuff. And so the only way I could get it out, I thought, I'll go get a gun and shoot the sow and pull the leg free. And then show it to somebody that might know of what kind of animal this come from. So when I went in the house to get the gun to kill the sow to get the leg out, two of the other sows started chewing on the thigh part of it. And then so I would have to shot three of them. And then my mom wouldn't allow me. Then she said, you're not going to go around killing that many. I like these pigs. So I wasn't able. So they ended up devouring it. But I did notice that the thigh bone of it, so the white, like most bones you see, was kind of light blue, the bone was. And the calf part was a way bigger muscle than what ordinary people have on the calf bone. And the calves stay big all the way to the area where it hits the ankle. That whole muscle there was a whole lot bigger than ordinary people's. And
let me stop you for a second if I can.
Okay.
I've been enthralled in what you've been saying, and now it's kind of blowing my mind totally.
Oh.
Is there any remnants of this creature left anywhere?
That's what I was talking to my friend. Well, I got a new friend, and he has a site about West Virginia Bigfoots. And I was talking to him, and I told him whenever later on, when I came home a year or two after that, and my sister Melba was there. She has already been married, but she was there. And I've been cutting wood, and there was a, and as soon as I got home, they yelled and said, she'd come up to me screaming that the dog was looking like something. And she saw it looked sort of like a infant or something because the dog was licking the afterbirth off of it. She thought maybe it was a baby monkey or a baby lamb or something. And by the time that I got there, the big old mastiff we had, Red, had already, after my mother was there too with her, said that it licked it clean. And then when one of the other dogs came up there, they started fighting with it over it. And
what's your sister last name?
Huh?
What's your sister Melba? What's her last name?
Oh, Burham. After it was quite I didn't want to go out there later on because the dogs had pulled it apart and it kind of been a mess. And one was trying to eat the skull of it, and it was too big to get its mouth to eat it. So my dad finally ordered me, he said, you get out there, Dennis, and clean that thing up. And so I remember at the time, so I scooped it up, and it looked like a newborn baby-ish type, but about three times bigger than what a human would be. And the front part of its jaw had that thing we saw in the field all pulled out and had those ridges like a chimpanzee kind of ridges above the eyes.
Dennis, let me stop you right now, okay?
Okay.
You're blowing my mind.
Oh.
You are totally blowing my mind, son. Now let me just back up just a minute, all right? Because you got to forgive me. I'm tired. I've been traveling for the last 50 hours. Are you trying to tell me that this was a fetus that came out of something?
Well, I think it was a fetus or a just-born one of these Bigfoot creatures, and the dog somehow got, maybe they killed the parent mother of it and got a hold of it. I don't know, because I wasn't home. It was my sister, Melva, was the one that watched it, all this happening right in the front yard, you know, out the window. Well, she finally, my mom said, went out there and tried to yell at the dog to stop. But she could have went down there and picked it up, but she didn't want to do that. Because, I don't know why she didn't. But anyway, it ended up getting killed in the thing. And then so I picked it up, what was left of it after the dogs fought over it. And I went down the canyon there and dug a hole. I don't even remember exactly where. And the dogs kept trying to take it away from me all the time I was burying it. So whether they went back and dug it up there or a remnant of it's still there. And I also thought maybe since sows ate that big leg bone, maybe in the garden, because see, we put them in our garden. And I thought maybe some of that undigested bone would have, you know, went through their digestive system and be in the soil all these years later. But I don't know, you know.
So let me ask you this then, Dennis. If I came and got you and we went back to Oklahoma, do you think you could dig this thing up?
I don't know. This many years, and I tried at the time, but like I said, well, besides where I put it, see, this area has been subdivided. When they subdivide, there was tractors moving dirt, bulldozers out there moving dirt. You know, the chances are that it didn't get moved in all this dirt work, they're probably pretty slim. That's what I'd figure. Because it really had been, you know, changed the lay of the land and stuff for development. So, you know, I don't know if it would be possible to find any skeleton remains of it.
Well, okay, so did you tell anybody? Did you tell any authorities? Did you go to anybody?
My sister wanted to, but my dad always had this thing about you don't tell the law anything about anything, you know, so nobody said anything.
Wow. I got to tell you something, Dennis. This is a pretty wild story. And you've kept this thing under wraps all these years, haven't you?
No. I first told it to a guy of the Gulf Coast Research Center, whoever runs that.
Oh, the seven. I know. Okay, and what'd he say?
He let me put it in his website thing, because it happened in Blaine County when I first seen it when it came to stuff. And I had a two or three conversations with him. Then he had a man from, I think, Oklahoma City call me, and I talked on the phone to a researcher guy from Oklahoma City. Then I moved from Oklahoma, so then we lost all contact. I mean, we moved to a different house I did in Oklahoma, so different phone number and everything. And so all the research just ended on it.
Yeah. Dennis, what do you do for a living, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, construction and farming. Mainly farming.
You're a farmer and you do construction?
Yeah.
And you're presently living in Florida?
Yeah. Presently. I don't know how long we'll keep living in here. But you know, I've worked on the farm my whole life here in Oklahoma, so we wanted to come out and see the world, so we've been out here a year or two looking around. But I'll probably go back, you know, to there, you know, probably maybe next winter or so.
Okay, so seeing the world is Florida, I guess, huh?
Yeah, well, on the way down, I also talked to him, often spent a year in Alabama. So then we've seen all that coastline and drove out in our cars and to be able to see all that Mississippi and Alabama area, that part, until we got down here to now Florida. We've been doing everything out here at Florida.
Okay. Well, listen,
another thing kind of odd about it was, when I lived in Oklahoma, everywhere I would move, then I was, you know, talking into the researchers, and I told them, you know, where are you living now, Dennis? And I'd tell them where I was living, and they'd say, you ain't going to believe this. We've been getting snowballs with calls from where you live, the ride a few miles, the area where you live now, Dennis. It really was weird. Everywhere I seemed to move to Oklahoma, it wouldn't be long, and then they'd be getting calls about sightings. So I think maybe I would spend so much time outdoors and in nature that got to recognizing who I was, and I would, we'd hunt over, you know, everybody's land over all of western Oklahoma, just about hunting and fishing just anywhere we wanted. So that put us out there able to see all the wildlife and animals that was out there. And what I noticed when I was younger, before I ever had any close experience with these things, I noticed to me that the heavy areas that I hunted and fished in, I would never see these bear-like things. But if you get more open areas where, you know, you could see for a long ways, and you get, like, we used to live next to Ghost Mound there in Oklahoma, south of Webster. Most of this, even though I hunted all over the whole western Oklahoma, most of my sightings was between Colony, Oklahoma, and between Hydro, Oklahoma. That seemed to be the hot spot, between Hydro and Colony.
Let me ask you, Dennis. And I appreciate you telling us that. How many encounters have you had throughout the years?
That I know was something weird like this?
Yes.
We've seen that there was a one in the cotton field, and that was July 1972, and there was one when I was 22 years old at the house. We had those two, and one time by the house there, east of Weatherford, I think I might have was attacked by one, but it was dark, and we thought it was robbing it. Anyway, it was carrying chickens out of the chicken house. And it was just, it got dark, so everything was shadowy. And my brother said, somebody is killing chickens out of the chicken house. So the first thing I did, since I have valuable chickens, rare chickens are valuable, I jumped outside and ran right where he said and crossed the fence. And I saw the big shadow, you know, I didn't think nothing of it. And so I then yelled and grabbed at it, armed that had the chickens in it. It had chickens in both arms. And then, you know, the turn into a little...
Dennis, excuse me now. Try to stay focused, yeah. Okay? So how many think you had? Just tell me how many
those. Those are the... And that time, and the other times where I thought we saw the little ones, the things, like... But before, I was like, from the time I was like 8, 10, 9, and 11, we would get on top of Ghost Mound, and I think, when I was a kid, four different times, about a quarter mile distance, we didn't have no binoculars or that, I'd seen something that looked like that. Walking up, okay. And, you know, the hairy looking.
Okay, listen, Dennis, apparently you're not going to answer my question, and I understand.
Oh, maybe I don't understand what you're...
Okay,
so
no, don't
all talk. Together.
Dennis, don't talk, listen. Those who listen will be rewarded. Here's the deal, okay? Count them on your fingers and count them on your toes. Do whatever you need or use a calculator. How many times have you seen these creatures, different creatures, with your own eye? How many? 5, 6... 10, 20, how many?
Now I'm on the Bigfoot Live radio show, I believe.
Six.
Okay, so six times. Good. Now, have you been on in our service? You been in the Army or Navy or anything like that?
Huh? No.
You haven't. Have you been on our service, in our nation's service? Have you been in the Army or Navy?
You haven't. No, I haven't.
Okay.
This is a group. So,
you're okay, though, right?
Next year.
Huh?
Are you okay?
Listen, I'll call you back.
Marco, I'm getting feedback from somebody else on the show here. What's going on?
I don't know, Dustin. Let me find out.
Hey, Dennis, can you still hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Okay, good. All right, so you haven't been in any accidents or anything like that, have you?
Let me see. I think when I was at 7 years old, was in a small car. I haven't been in accidents that much. I'm a good driver. My family's good drivers.
But it hasn't impeded anything with you and your sight or hearing or memory or anything, has it? You haven't gotten hurt, right?
Well, at the university and at the high school, I was one of the top students, so I don't think so.
Okay, so, but you're okay. You've got all your faculties and everything's George. You're all right?
As far as I know.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. I just drove 50-some-odd hours blowing my mind for the last 40 minutes. Okay, you're an incredible man. And I'll tell you what, I'd love to go out with you out in the woods. Let me know when you're available. I'll even send a car for you, okay?
Okay.
God bless you. Listen, we got a lot more show ahead of us, so why don't you, Marco, press his mute button so he can hear the rest of the stories, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dennis, for joining us, okay?
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, nice to talk to you, too. Hey, Marco?
Yes.
Let's pause for the cause, okay? Go to a commercial.
Oh, here we go.
There was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And back to you, Tom.
Thank you, Marco. Bill. So, I got to tell you,
just for your information, Tom, Bruce is on.
Okay, good.
So is Jim Dawson.
Okay, you're echoing out. I don't know.
Okay, that's better.
It is, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, let's get out there to, I don't know if we're going to go to Illinois or we're going to go to Arkansas, but our newfound friend, Mr. Dynamite himself, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jim Dawson. Jimmy, you out there?
You bet. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Thank you. How is your stability this evening?
Well, about this evening, I listened to my daughter in a choir concert. They were doing great. It was at an amphitheater, and I spent the afternoon with my son at the mall, and I just had a great day, just a wonderful day with my kids, and we're getting ready to drive back down to Arkansas in the morning. We've got the truck loaded up, and everybody's packed, and everything's thrown in there. So about 7, we're going to head out to Arkansas. We've got about a 9-hour drive to get down there, and they're going to spend the next 3 weeks with me down there, and then Jack's staying to go to school. So we're really excited.
That's wonderful. And by the way, Tyler in the chat room, I agree with you.
Whatever you just said, I agree with you, Tyler. You're the best. Listen, I got to tell you something. You were out there with us in Vermont. It was an honor having you with us. And the reason why you were there, ladies and gentlemen, or we were there, is because we got a tip from this young man. And he had befriended this guy, Rick Dakota, a.k.a. Tom McKinney. And I guess he has, what, 61 videos on YouTube?
That's correct. He has actually 63, and he emailed me when we were driving back from Vermont, and apparently he had posted another one or two. I haven't went to see him yet. I haven't had a chance. But he started in 2007 doing research in that area, and he wasn't really sure what he was researching. He just got a new camera, and he was out. He loves being out in the woods, and he just was out walking around with his new camera up in the mountains, and he found a pile of hair. And he didn't really know what to think about it, and then someone suggested it may be Bigfoot. He found, in fact, he found two piles of hair. And it just came by me. He was just, he didn't know what it was. And someone suggested it might be a Bigfoot. And then as he did more research on Bigfoot, he began to find footprints. And then he began to leave things for them, rocks and marbles and shiny things. And ultimately, two, three, four, five, six, seven videos later, I don't remember which numbers they are, it's parts 1 through 63. They started trading with him. They would leave animals. They would leave rocks. They would leave him bones that had been chewed on, et cetera. And he's got four different areas with a bunch of different stuff going on. And so I emailed him, he's very private. He's the kind of guy that he just doesn't give you a lot of information if he doesn't know you. Because what happened was he got he was contacted by this fellow that lives in the Vermont area that happens to be affiliated with another organization. And the guy I've talked about him before. The guy ended up stealing a bunch of his stuff. The guy asked him to work with him and show him his area and the fur and all that stuff. So Rick didn't know. He went out and showed him everything, and then showed him what he had found, and then the guy they decided to work together for a little bit, and then the guy started they'd go out and bait up cameras and do stuff, and then agree they won't go back out for a week, and then the guy would go out there the next day, and Rick just ended up he couldn't work with him, and then the guy ended up writing a book using all of Rick's stuff, and this is probably by the time Rick had gotten to 30 videos or so when this guy from the other organization had befriended him. And so the guy ended up writing a book using all of Rick's stuff in Rick's area, and that had really made Rick very skeptical of showing anyone anything. And so you'll notice if you go to his channel on YouTube, it's Reality Ghost. Reality Ghost is his channel. You can watch the 63 videos. They are incredible. And but he blacks out signs and stuff. I don't want to give that information away to the folks like this BFO guy or the other organization. So. But he's very private, so it was a long time, you know, to get him to trust me. And I'm a very trustworthy person. I've kept my word with him at every step of the way. And the guy is he's just very private. He doesn't step away. So finally, whenever you had called me and we've been talking back and forth, I finally convinced him to speak to you, and then went from there. So that's kind of the story of how this started. And Rick's a great guy. He's really smart. He spent a lot of time out there in the woods. He's been out there since 2007. So his videos are 1 through 63. There may be a few more now, but they span over 4 years.
Yeah, pretty incredible stories I heard, I tell you. And he's, like you said, a very quiet man, very man that's into his research and how he does research. Why don't you tell my listeners out there around the globe, Jim, you had a first chance, you went one big giant step from never go on an expedition, then you went with the top guy and his crew. Tell everybody what it was like.
Well, it was really amazing. You know, I've spent the last 7, 8, 9 months being what I hear people say, a keyboard command, and that's probably true. I think most of the people in the world watch, or, you know, the Bigfoot story is unfolds. And it's interesting, to watch the different stuff that's on YouTube and the different websites that are out there and so on and so forth. And I began actually in the winter up here in Chicago. The winter begins about Halloween or so. We usually the snow flies by Halloween, and it ends up the snow melts by April or May. I still had a five or six foot pile of snow in my driveway at the end of beginning of May. But interestingly, you guys are so dedicated. It's incredible. Bud is incredible. He's one of the smartest guys I've talked to in a long time. You are incredibly intelligent. Bill Coffey is incredibly intelligent. You surrounded yourself with really good people, and you guys really have your act together. And of course, I rather expected that part of it, but the discipline that you guys keep is amazing to me. You work very, very hard. And you really do what you say you're going to do. You guys picked me up at the time that you indicated you were going to pick me up in Chicago as you drove through, and we literally drove from Chicago to Vermont, almost to Vermont. We finally got a room pretty early in the morning. But you got driven from San Francisco to the state of New York in 48 hours straight through. And when we arrived there, we immediately went over and met with Rick and did contracts. And you know, you do it the right way. And then we set up a time to go meet, and we actually got up at 1 o'clock in the morning and drove and got Rick, and we're out to the mountain and drove halfway up or a quarter of the way up, however far we got up, by 2:30 or 3. Now, the plan was to be there at sunrise. Rick said the sun comes up about 3:30 or 4, and we got out of the truck and started climbing this mountain. And I want to tell you folks, we had backpacks. Everybody had probably anywhere from 20 to 65 or 70 pounds of gear. And we get out and it's dark, and we're going up this trail up the side of a mountain in Vermont. And I mean, it's darn near straight up. And we climbed that thing, and we just kept going. And I was amazed when the sun came up, and it was beautiful. But when we're coming back down, it's almost straight up and down. It was amazing. And everybody worked so hard to keep the schedule and to do the things that we did. And you know, it's interesting. You know, there's a lot of naysayers out there. And this guy said to me the other day, I'd say about a month ago or so, he said, you know, I don't believe in Bigfoot. About every 30 years, all this stuff pops up. There's something new. And you know, and I started watching the cycles of the videos on YouTube and the different websites and the different organizations that are out there. And you know, to a degree, he said something that was very significant. He said about every 3 years, this stuff really gets popular, and then it kind of dies off. And what I find amazing about you, Tom, is that that you've had 39 years in this business, so you've had 40 years nearly of those 3 year cycles, and you're still here. There's no one that has a record like that, so I'm very, very lucky to be able to go out on my first expedition with a man of your caliber. I mean, there are no other, and when we get out there, you guys, you have everything there. You've got your equipment, you've got thermal gear, you've got thermal cameras, it's amazing, and the discipline that you keep. And the work that you do is really incredible. And after we decided to leave, at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, Bill and I are out washing the truck, and Youngblood is putting all the gear in the trailer, and we finally get to bed at 4 in the morning. We get up about 8, get some breakfast, and we drive Vermont all the way to Chicago, drop me off, and then you took off and drove. So he's when he said he's been driving for a week and out in the field, we've literally, that is the truth. It's amazing to me, the discipline. You know, my girlfriend You know, she had this idea that, you know, we're going to go out and we're going to look for Bigfoot and, you know, drink, you know, we'll probably drink some, you know, hit some bars and do this, that, and the other. Let me tell you something. I suggested to young brother, I said, let's get us a 12-pack of beer when we get back and have a cold one. He said, no, we better talk to Chief. He goes, we don't drink out in the field. We don't do any of that. I mean, there's no playing around. There's no, a lot of fun games. We have fun now, but there's no. Up going out to bars, you know, chasing around doing that stuff. It is all business, and it's very expensive. I mean, you know, the rooms, the gasoline at $4 a gallon or $3.50 a gallon, whatever you are, depends on which state. I mean, the expense of it, the discipline that it takes. I mean, this is hard work, and you don't have a regular schedule. You might get up at 1 o'clock in the morning to go out in the field. You might go out at 10 o'clock at night. You might, and you're out there. I mean, you're out there in the woods with flashlights and gear and equipment and climbing around and then put up cameras, and it's just an incredible experience. And I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. It was really a lot of fun, and I learned so much.
Thank you for that. The boys, thank you, too, immensely. And I want to tell everybody out there, there's somebody in our court now, somebody who's also knows who we are, what we are, and what we've done. Her name is Sharon Lee, ladies and gentlemen. You can go to thebigfootfieldreporter.com. She has been kind enough to do a little story, a little soliloquy on Tom Biscardi and searching for Bigfoot. I suggest go to it as soon as you can and listen to her take on this expedition. She mentions Youngblood, Rob. She mentions Bill Coffey. She mentions Jim Dawson. She mentions myself. I got to tell you, you remember this name, Sharon Lee, the BigfootFieldReporter.com, ladies and gentlemen. She has probably one of the biggest smarts and is one of the most intelligent people I have ever met in this industry. She doesn't walk the fence, the middle of the fence. She does. There's no gray area with her, and she has balls enough to go out and check with her own eyes, her own ears, and tells it like it is. I got a call from her today. One of our followers, one of our people who believe in us, had seen her article and wrote her back. She called me and she says, you know what, Tom Biscardi? She didn't say Tom Biscardi. She calls me Carmine, but she's from the East Coast. And she says to me, I got to tell you, Carmine, this thing wrenched at my heart from one of your followers. I'd love to come on the air and read it to you if I may. Sharon Lee, if you're out there, I'd love for you to get on and read that story, because I think my listeners would love to hear it. Are you out there? Bill, has she got her ears on? Bill, she says that you muted her. Can you unmute her?
Well, I probably did. I don't know which number she is, Tom. You didn't tell me.
440 area code.
So what? What's the area code?
440.
Okay, here we go. Sharon, are you there?
Whew, that was painful. You know how hard it is not to be able to talk? Don't.
Sharon.
No clue. Hello?
Are you there? Hi, thanks
yes,
so much
Sharon.
For joining. Would you be kind enough to read that email that you got from one of our people?
I sure will. Okay, I'm going to go. Hi, this is the email. Hi, this is Rebecca B., and I wanted you to know that I have just read the article you wrote on your very recent expedition with Tom Biscardi and his crew and your article on Melba Ketchum's activity. I am extremely impressed on your ability to get to the point in a very unbiased way. I have also met Tom and his guys and can assure anyone that they are the hardest working team that I know of that also produce results. Tom is, as you say, he is honest, hardworking, and very congenial toward anyone who approaches him with a report. His team is very devoted to Tom and his quest, endeavoring to do all that is needed to prove this creature exists, and I truly believe that they will come out way ahead of the pack. P.S. It took a woman with intelligence to come out and find the truth, Sharon, and we need more people such as yourself that is dedicated to find the truth about this quest. Thank you for all you do.
Totally amazing. Totally, totally amazing. Ladies and gentlemen,
here's another woman that's been in our court for I don't know how many years now, five, six, whatever it may be. But here's a woman that has been out in the field. Here's a woman that just doesn't talk the story. She walks the talk, just like this Sharon Lee. I suggest if you're the female gender and you don't like to get it from a male researchers, contact either one of these gals. They'll tell you what it's all about. They'll tell you how to get started, and they'll be there to support you. Sharon, I want to thank you for the kind words. I want to thank you for your support, and I hope that we have built up a business relationship here that will last for eternity.
You know it.
It means an awful lot to all of us, okay? It means an awful lot to all of us. And Jim, you have anything to say to? You have anything to say to Sharon Lee?
Sharon, it was an honor to meet you. I think you're one of the sharpest ladies I have ever spoken with. It was a pleasure to spend the days with you. And you know, I really had a great time, and I learned so much. What a great start for me to be able to go out in the field for the first time with Tom and Youngblood and Bill and you. I gained 15 years experience at least in one weekend because I was with you. And I can't tell you how much fun I had and how much I learned. And I really appreciate it. And I look forward to a long, fun relationship. I think you're just absolutely wonderful.
I loved all you guys. I felt like the token little sister there. It was a good time, and I miss Bill. Hi, Bill, and hi, Rob. I know you guys are listening. Love you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And mute yourself out because I have my brother from the north, and we only got about a minute and a half. Jimmy, you do the same thing. We'll be in touch with you guys real soon. Bill, is my brother Bruce on the line? Bruce, are you there? Bill, are you there?
Go ahead, Bruce.
Hello?
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Good. I'm fine.
Good.
Bill, investigating that deal with the pipeline. I haven't heard from Wade tonight. I've been kind of busy, though. And there was a message on the phone, but he didn't leave no message. So I don't know. I got to call him after the show and see what the deal is, if you haven't heard from him.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you what Bruce is trying to tell everybody right now. We've heard from Wade four times today, okay, to answer your question.
Okay.
Number two, okay, they're doing a pipeline going across the reservation in the mountainous areas, ladies and gentlemen, okay? The night crew refuses to go to work because they feel they are in harm's way with these creatures that are yelping, that are making terrible sounds and threatening the workers. So what's happening right now is we are trying to negotiate something with the tribe and with the people laying the pipe. And that's what's going on right now. And this is all going through our good brother, Bruce, and our other people that we've made good friends with over the years. Is that correct, Bruce?
That's correct.
Okay. And I'll tell you what. We're here in our new area right now, and I got to tell you, the area looks ripe and it looks well. And I can't wait. I'll call you after the show because we just exceeded our time. Thank you, Bruce. I know that you had a lot working tonight to be with us. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Dennis. And thank you all the people that we have in our...
And Tom, you want to say hi to Becky?
Oh, gosh, I do. Becky, are you out there?
Go ahead, Becky.
Hi. How you doing?
Hi, Becky. How are you? Listen, I want to thank you so much. That was a wonderful comment that you made to Sharon, and it just took us by surprise. But knowing you, you're just a warm-felt human being, and that was so true, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart, okay?
Oh, you're welcome, Tom. We're glad to have her on our side.
God bless you, sweetheart.
Kudos and salutations. Till next time, America.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they hold and a promise till the day that they die. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door.